Listener supported. WNYC Studios. Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Leadership support for More Perfect is provided by the Joyce Foundation.
The true symbol of the United States is not the bald eagle, it is the pendulum. And when the pendulum swings too far in one direction, it will go back. Back. It will go back.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad. This is More Perfect, a series about the cases that land in front of the Supreme Court. And in this episode, which we might as well call Pendulum Part 2, we're going to take a deep dive into what might be the most horrible Supreme Court decision ever, and an attempt, 160 years after the fact, in a Hilton Hotel ballroom, to finally set it right.
Hey, do you know about the USA? Do you know about the government? Can you tell me about the Constitution?
This is a case that split the United States in two.
We the people.
So the case in question is the Dred Scott case. Which, if you ask people...
I was wondering if you've ever heard of the Dred Scott court case?
The Dred Scott. Sounds familiar.
Doesn't go well.
Nothing coming up?
Man, I don't know. My high school history teacher would be really mad at me right now. I don't know.
I don't remember anything about it.
Remember nothing?
You get a lot of people who are like, was that like a civil rights thing?
Probably something to do with segregation.
You're warm.
I'm warm.
Or was it Obama?
Like the name had some familiarity, yes?
Yes.
The Dred, okay.
Dred? What does that mean?
Dred Scott. It's a name.
I don't know. This is the first time I hear.
United States of America.
So what happens a lot of times is that people don't actually understand why they're free. So Dred Scott is one of those fundamental decisions that lays the groundwork for the reasons why we can live in a multicultural society.
This is Ellie Mistal, More Perfect's legal editor.
But to really understand the case, you've got to go to a place called Fort Snelling. It's a small army base about 15 minutes north of the Minneapolis airport.
Snow freshly laid on the ground.
And our producer, Julia Longoria,
took a trip there.
Right over here.
And this guy?
I'm Richard Josie, manager of programs here at the Minnesota Historical Society.
Gave her a tour.
Yep.
So what are we walking into now?
So what you're getting ready to see right now is the space that we think, you know, is probably where Dred and Harriet Scott, you know, where they live.
Before we go in, can you just sort of set up when in time are we? What's happening?
This is the 1830s.
We're 30 years out from the Civil War.
By the 1830s, about half the states in the Union have slavery, about half don't. So it's this question that's kind of still unanswered. Like, should we be a free nation or should we be a slave nation?
So there's a real tension here. And there's a real understanding here that this might not work.
And just as we're about to reach this breaking point, an army doctor named John Emerson,
a white guy,
definitely a white guy, slave owner, steps into free territory and arrives here to this army base on a hill. And he brings with him his one slave, Dred Scott.
And now we're actually inside the fortress, if you will. And, you know, all of the stone, all of the windows, it's kind of like, whenever I come here, I have this kind of cold feeling, even when it's hot outside.
He walks us up to the back of this one squat building on the far end of the base. Can you describe the room?
I think we're probably looking at a maybe 7.5-foot ceiling. Wood grain floor, wood clapboard floor, with stone walls.
It's a tiny room, a little bigger than a king bed. There's a fireplace, a little table, some redwood cabinets.
And so this is a home. This is a kitchen. This is a laundry place. This is, you know, your one-stop shop.
And the reason this room is so important is because Dred Scott, living in this room, for the first time in his life, he got a taste of what it might be like to be free. I mean, obviously he was still a slave, but Dr. Emerson would leave the fort for months at a time and have him work for other people. He had a degree of autonomy.
And Harriet and Dred met here, right?
Yeah.
When he was here, he met a girl.
1836, 1837. Yeah, they met here.
Richard Josie likes to stand here and imagine just how that might have went down.
I can imagine, you know, Harriet, you know, having been here and Dred being over by the store. And having a conversation with one of the other black guys that was here. And I can imagine him saying, "Did you see the new girl that's here?" Here she comes walking by. "Jim, who is that?" "I'm gonna make her mine." Like, I can imagine him saying that.
Over the next few years, Dred and Harriet had two kids, both of them girls.
And I personally think that what happened was children seem to change everything.
So what ends up happening is that Dr. Emerson moves Dred Scott and his family back to Missouri. They're back in a slave state. And Dr. Emerson ends up passing away. And it seems like his wife is gonna maybe sell Dred Scott's daughters. So what Dred and Harriet Scott end up deciding to do, the whole reason we know Dred Scott's name, is that they decide to sue for their own freedom.
That's a lawsuit that Dred Scott had every right to believe that he would win. There was a doctrine called once free, always free, that the minute your foot landed in the snow of the North, the minute you and your owner walked into free territory, you were free. And you could not be returned to a state of bondage.
This was a well-known legal argument. And in fact, Dred Scott won at a lower court. So it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court says, no, you're still property. And the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Roger Taney,
very famously, he says, "The black man has no rights that the white man is bound to respect." Taney, in an amazingly broad decision, not only slams the door on Dred Scott's freedom, he slams the door on the potential for any African American, free or not free, to ever have full citizenship in this country.
And at that point in time, at the highest court of the land to make that decision, that was putting a period on sort of this overarching battle between the North and the South, the forced slavery and the abolitionists. And so when this happens, now you start seeing civil war popping off.
Now, as far as Dred Scott, the case, is concerned, like speaking legally, the 13th and 14th Amendments did come along and overturn it.
But like that line, like, "The black man has no rights that a white man is bound to respect." Like, you can't overturn that line.
And these days, you know, as the pendulum swings and we see a rise in blatant, overt white nationalism.
There's more than 3 dozen people injured.
And violence over statues.
This car plowed into a crowd of people.
That line still hovers above us all. But suppose you're a direct descendant of that case, of that history. Suppose your name is Scott, or your last name is Taney. What do you do with that? Particularly now, like, what do you do with that history? Do you ignore it? Is it not your problem? Or do you address it? And if you do, how? Coming up next, after the break, we walk into a hotel lobby in St. Louis and get an answer we just did not expect.
Hey,
More Perfect will continue in a moment.
More Perfect is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/moreperfect. netsuite.com/moreperfect. WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Texas doctors confront the reality of the abortion ban.
A violation of the law could result in a first-degree felony charge and a fine of at least $100,000. After Roe was overturned, the message from doctors was, I'm out of here.
Revisiting the abortion laws in Texas. That's the New Yorker Radio Hour from WNYC Studios. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is More Perfect. I'm Jad Abumrad. Okay, now we come to the reunion. As she was reporting this story, producer Julia Longoria was doing a little Googling, located a couple of Scott Tawney descendants, and then found out that they were actually planning to meet up to have this kind of historic summit, which was like, we thought was bananas. So she went, and it was bananas. And as soon as she came back, she sat down in the studio and told Ellie Mistal and I all about it.
So where to start? So I walked into this Hilton Frontenac Hotel in St. Louis. You know, your classic hotel atrium with like a very weird carpet pattern. Like, and I walk in and it's like,
hello, Julia.
How are you?
It's almost like a conference.
Oh, you're Julia.
And I'm greeted by the great, great granddaughter of Dred Scott.
Wow.
And yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, literally, this is our inaugural Sons and Daughters of Reconciliation event.
Name's Lynn Jackson. She's the main organizer.
This was always a dream that I had about 12 years ago, that if I could meet other descendants, wouldn't that be cool?
Then she immediately tells me,
I'm a networker.
I'm a networker. I'm going to connect you with everyone here.
That's what I like doing. And this is the Blow family right here.
And immediately, she introduces me to these three people.
What's your name?
Mimi LaBourgeois.
John LaBourgeois.
I'm Ashton LaBourgeois.
Who are descendants of the Blow family, the first family who owned her great-great-grandpa.
Wow.
Here's some more fun guests. Hello, guys. Come on in.
She also introduced me to the great-great-great...
And you're the great-great...
Sixth great-grandson
of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah. Grandson of Thomas Jefferson. I met...
What's your name?
I'm Bertram Hayes Davis, hyphenated.
A descendant of Jefferson Davis. You know, the guy who led the Confederacy against the Union in the Civil War. And everybody's hugging, laughing. It was wild.
Almost like, it sounds like almost like a meaning of the Utopian Society.
Yes, exactly. And the whole idea, everyone kind of wanted...
Reconciliation.
Reconciliation.
Reconciliation. That was like the word of the day. Reconciliation, reconciliation.
Reconciliation. I think a lot of the country needs that now, you know, so I think a lot of people here...
And so I'm wandering around and greeting these people, like going up, shaking hands with random people. And then I meet this one guy.
It's my cousin, Dred Scott Madison.
Lynn introduced us.
Yes. Dred Madison. I am the great-great-grandson of Dred and Harriet Scott.
And I look in his eyes, and I was like, holy shit. Those are Dred Scott's eyes. I mean, there's really only one picture of Dred Scott that exists, and it's from around 1857. He's wearing a suit, staring straight at the camera, and his eyes are, like, almost glassy, and his pupils are really big, and it's just striking. I felt like I was looking right into those same eyes.
And have you always known that you're related to Dred Scott? I imagine,
yes.
What's your relationship to that history? What do you, when you think about it, what do you feel?
I have mixed feelings. Based on what Chief Justice Taney said and the decision they made, you're a subhuman species with no rights a white man is bound to respect.
Blacks have no rights that white men are bound to respect.
That still resonates today, in my opinion. What really hit me the hardest, and it's hard for me to even think about this because it just bothers me, was the Trayvon Martin. This kid was walking home from a store, wasn't bothering him, wasn't breaking any laws. Someone decided to follow him, pull up on him, and ended up murdering him. That guy parked his car, got out of his car, invaded this young man's space, and murdered him, and used the Stand Your Ground law. And that's a perfect example of, your ground is yours until I decide it's not.
I meet Dred just as he is about to shake hands for the first time with the family who owned his family.
A whole lot of stuff that goes through your mind. Are they gonna be buttheads? Are they gonna be arrogant? That all goes through your head, but you know, you have to approach people. You have to approach people for who they are. You gotta have an open mind.
And one of the most striking things I learned from Dred Scott Jr., and also from his sister Barbara.
I'm Barbara McGregory. I'm Dred Scott's great-great-granddaughter.
Is that the Dred Scott history was actually something that was kind of kept from them.
It was a hush-hush thing. Because the Dred Scott decision, I don't know if you are understanding what that was. That was the last straw that sparked the Civil War. My dad, when they were growing up, they had death threats. They couldn't tell anybody who they were related to.
Your dad, that generation, this was like 100 years after the decision, that generation had to keep it a secret?
That's his great-grandfather. His grandmother was Dred Scott's daughter.
Dred Jr. told me that his dad was actually partially raised by Dred Scott's daughter.
Aunt Lizzie.
Whose name was Lizzie.
Tried to hide the fact. In fact, someone told me she might have been kind of mad when my grandfather and grandmother named my father Dred Scott because she was in hiding. You got to remember, when she was 6 years old, they went in hiding for 5 years during the trial, her and her sister. Because the whole basis of the trial was he didn't want his family split up. So when he lost the second appeal, he sent the girls into hiding because he didn't want them sold away. So Lizzie stayed pretty much undercover. She lived in a little room, but she always had the shades closed.
So Dred and Barbara told me their parents never talked about Dred Scott. They never had a picture up in the house. They never even knew what he looked like. In fact, as we were standing there in the lobby of the Hilton, Dred pulls out his phone.
Photos of Dred Scott.
Okay, pictures of Dred Scott.
And he brings up the photo on Google. Wait.
That's the actual photograph, which looks, let's see.
Looks like this, that's it.
Yeah.
So can you describe it?
Really dark eyes. He's wearing a suit.
Like he was impressed, I think. Like you wouldn't expect a
slave to be dressed so nice.
Wait, is that the first time he's seen the picture of Dred Scott?
No, it's not the first time. But it seemed like he was noticing things in it for the first time.
He looks really dignified and stern in that picture. But he looks like a man who's gone through it and is ready to go through some more. He does.
She has to have a separate check.
Yes.
You know, it's just
Okay, so at the end of the night, I end up at the hotel bar with another descendant.
So it's...
She's on the clock. Being interviewed?
I'll let her answer that.
No, I think you should answer that.
So the Dred Scott case is a famous Supreme Court case, and the Chief Justice who ruled in the case was named Roger Brooke Taney. So I'm a Taney.
Charlie Taney is the great-great-grandnephew of Roger Brooke Taney, who is the Chief Justice who basically denied Dred Scott his freedom. He's kind of a tall guy, white hair.
I'll take one more gin and tonic, okay.
Glasses on tip of his nose.
You know, we had a leather-bound original copy of that decision.
And he was actually sitting next to three descendants from the family who originally owned Dred Scott. They were like, come join us. And so to my left is the descendant of the people who owned Dred Scott. And to my right are the people who kept Dred Scott enslaved.
Are you not going to eat one of those?
I'm not. Please have one.
And they were all just having gin and tonics and crab cakes.
I was trying to remember that quote from Faulkner where he says, the past is never dead. It's not even past.
That's great.
Can you describe the first images you saw of Taney? Eventually, I steer the conversation back to Charlie Taney's ancestor, Roger Taney, the Supreme Court Justice.
Well, we have pictures of him hanging in our when I grew up in the house.
It was up on the wall, and I remember it had this light over it.
Unlike the Dred Scott family, Charlie Taney and his daughter Kate
Taney Billingsley.
Grew up knowing exactly what Roger looks like.
His skin flapped over and he had these long jowls, but he was also a thin man.
See, well, he was very sickly.
That's something I really recall.
He looks like...
That spooked me.
That shriveled up little old man who lives up in the house on the hill that hardly ever comes out of his house and all the kids are scared of. You grew up, I mean, you know, when's the first time you studied the Civil War? Probably like fifth grade, sixth mm-hmm. grade? And you're like sliding down in your seat when they get to the Dred Scott decision because, you know, this is really terrible and that's my family and oh my God, they did that. So no, you're very aware of it. You know? And we're also, you know, while you're, well, that's a black mark on our family. He also ran one of the most productive courts and it was during a time of explosive growth in the country. So we're very proud of his role in helping form America. What he's known for is the single worst decision ever made by the Supreme Court. If you're a family member, it's a little difficult to have that be the only focus.
It's incomplete.
Sitting there, it was pretty clear that Charlie Taney was kind of like Dred Scott Madison. He also had some mixed feelings.
Yeah, well, having read a number of his letters, I think he really loved his wife and his family, and I think he was a very loving father, and he was against slavery, is pretty clear. He thought it was a blot on the national character.
He thought slavery was wrong? Are we talking about Taney still?
He felt it was wrong and should eventually be just done away with.
He told me that in one of his legal arguments, Taney totally railed against slave drivers.
He said something to the effect of, these people are reptiles who deal in the trafficking of human flesh.
Sitting there, Charlie tells me that Roger Taney was trying to save the Union. That somehow, if he ruled that America was a slaveocracy once and for all, that might somehow delay the Civil War.
And he was trying to solve the issue of slavery in America. That might be true, but what you can't overlook is, when you read that language, that he was a stone racist. I mean, he just was.
And I asked them, like, when you met the Scots, like, what did you feel? Like, what did you feel like you wanted to communicate something to them? And the Blow descendant, you know, the family who originally owned Dred Scott, said, Yeah.
Yeah, like, we're sorry.
And I was like, I turned to Tani and said, like, have you ever actually apologized? And he was like, I don't know.
I don't know if I ever use those words. I don't recall ever using those words.
Thank you, Brandon.
Next day.
Well, welcome to the Dred Scott Reconciliation Forum. I know,
day two at the forum, about 100 people crammed into the grand ballroom of the Hilton. And a preacher.
So to begin the day in our proceedings, I'd like to ask if you'd stand with me and go to the Lord in prayer to bless these proceedings today.
Led the group in prayer.
Heavenly Father, we come to you this day seeking your blessings in this room. And we ask, Lord, that this reconciliation would begin today in a profound way in each of our hearts as we learn from our past to move to our future. Bless us this day, and Lord, we give you praise. In Jesus' name we pray, and all of God's people say it. Amen. You may be seated.
And then?
At this time, we would like for all of the descendants, if you will, to please just stand.
These descendants get up on stage.
Thank you and good morning, everyone.
One by one.
I'm so happy to be here as part of the Reconciliation Conference.
And they give like a little spiel about
hello, thank you so much. Thank
who they are, what reconciliation means to them.
And a lot of people don't know that Thomas Jefferson's wife, Martha, is a half-sister of Sally Hemings.
Things you might not know about their ancestor.
They had the same father, John Wells.
And then after about five people had spoken,
please welcome Charlie to the stage.
Charlie Taney got up to talk.
Morning. So the first thing I'd like to do is tell you all how glad I am to be here, and a real honor and privilege to be here. So let me start with Roger Brooke Taney and what it was like to grow up as a Taney. To grow up as a Taney, in terms of how we feel about him, it's a mixed bag. It's a very mixed thing. Because on the one hand, as a Taney, you're proud of him. He was one of the longest serving chief justices. The Bible he swore Lincoln in with is the same Bible that President Obama was sworn in on. However, that's not what he's known for. What he's known for is one thing. He's known for the Dred Scott decision. And just so we all want to get a handle on that, let me read you a sentence that he wrote. It was his opinion at the time of the Constitution that African Americans, here's the quote, for more than a century have been regarded as beings of an inferior order. Unfit to associate with white, the white race, so far inferior. They had no rights which the white man was bound to respect. So, you might be proud of him, but you can't duck that. You can't duck that. So, I looked up reconciliation. I looked up this morning, the process of reconciliation. And there are three steps. The first step is apology. The second step is forgiveness. And the third step is a new trust that grows out of that. But someone asked Kate about this issue of apology. And what Kate said was, my daughter said, well, she said, you know, a Taney bringing an apology to a Scott is like bringing a Band-Aid to an amputation. It is not enough.
But he was like, you got to start somewhere.
So let's make a little history today. From the Tawnies to all the Scots, you have our apology.
Yeah. I spoke to Scott descendants afterwards.
Yeah. How was that? What did you think of that?
Very much more emotional than I thought.
That's great-great-granddaughter Barbara McGregory.
No one's ever apologized. Clinton made an apology some years ago, but coming from him didn't mean much. But when Tawny got emotional when he was reading that letter, that was more heartfelt to me than anything else. The apology was okay, but his emotion really touched me.
Barbara, the Dred Scott descendant, was like, when he choked up reading that, I could feel that. Like, that felt like healing. But
how you doing?
Hello.
Then I pull aside her brother.
Can I ask you what you're thinking about? How did you respond to all of that?
Dred Scott Madison, the one with the eyes.
Everything was fine. It's just, to be honest, the last part, I choose my words carefully. I didn't like it. I don't think somebody should have to apologize for something they didn't do. That's their ancestors. I was very uncomfortable with that. That's the fact that they're here is apology enough. Apologizing for something your ancestor did, you're part of a gene pool, you didn't do anything. You're judged by your works, not someone else's. Show me that you care. Don't tell me that you're sorry. Tell me that you're going to do better. So that's the only comment I have on it.
Couple final notes. When we talked to Dred Scott Madison later, he was pretty clear that Charlie Tawny is already doing a lot of good. He's helping the Dred Scott Foundation to raise money. That's why he felt that Charlie didn't need to apologize. Also, when we started the story, there were statues of Roger Brooke Tawny in Annapolis and in Baltimore, both in front of courthouses. This is actually how the Tawnys and Scotts, one of the first ways that they'd come together, they had decided collectively on a plan to amend those two statues. Rather than take them down, they had decided to put a Dred Scott statue next to them. That had been the plan. They'd been working on it. They had met with politicians. They'd met with the mayor of Baltimore. But then, as we were finishing up the story,
Good Morning Maryland begins now with breaking news.
Charlottesville happened. And in the wake of Charlottesville.
And we certainly do have some breaking news this morning. The Roger Brooke Tawny statue is no longer standing outside the Maryland State House in Annapolis.
It's the latest image of a pro-slavery icon to come down in the wake of violent racial clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Both statues were taken down in the same week.
It was really weird out here. I'm saying about 25 to 30 people out here. Here's what happened. They started to rope off the street, and then at 12:20 they started, and they hoisted Tawny up. There was a golf clap when Tawny came off the pedestal here and was removed. But other than that, everybody was quiet. Nobody had an opinion on this. And if they did, they kept it to themselves. 145-year history gone here tonight, and I'll get out of the way. This is all that's left. This is the pedestal that is left.
More Perfect is produced by me, Jad Abumrad, Susie Lechtenberg, Jenny Lawton, Julia Longoria, Kelly Prime, Sara Kari, Sean Ramosferam, and Alex Overington. Alex, go.
With Ellie Mistal, Christian Farias, Linda Hirschman, David Gable, and Michelle Harris. Thanks to Kate Tawny Billingsley, whose play, A Man of His Time, helped inspire this episode. Supreme Court audio is from Oye, a free law project in collaboration with the Legal Information Institute at Cornell. Leadership support for More Perfect is provided by the Joyce Foundation. Additional funding is provided by the Charles Evans Hughes Memorial Foundation.